and welcome to another episode of Little Fish. My name is Andrew Hunter-Murray. I'm joined by Dan Schreiber and Anna Tyszynski, and we are here with some of your best facts from the last 7 days. That's the whole intro.
I like it. This is my first time and I'm wowed. Oh.
Something to know, Andy's very good at intros.
I've heard that.
Prime example.
Well, the outros are where I shine. But anyway, let's get on. Does anyone have an audience fact they'd like to bring to the table?
Yeah, I got one here. This is from Cara Eaton. And God, this is my first Little Fish fact, so it has to be really good, Cara. And it's the fact that up until 1999, the state of Montana didn't have speed limit signs along their highways. The sign simply said, drive what is reasonable and prudent.
I like that. Treat the public like grown-ups, and I'm sure they won't take the piss.
What kind of debate do you have with the cop that's pulled you over when they don't think that you have been driving?
Well, I think that's an interesting conversation, isn't it? Yeah, it was raining, but my tires are very good, so I was in a hurry.
I've only had one drink. My wife is giving birth. So I'm celebrating early. But every police car is followed by a philosopher car. That's the nice thing.
Yes,
and
right.
You talk about what is prudence.
I wonder what the most unbelievable amount of excuses were in one single car that was speeding. A wife in labor. There were bees in the back.
A brick fell on the accelerator. Well, you don't need excuses. There is no limit. I would question, Cara, the wording. Drive what is reasonable and prudent.
It's very Cockney,
drive
East London.
What is reasonable?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that's exactly what they read, but anyway, it's true. I've checked it.
Wow.
And it was actually because there was a famous 55-mile-an-hour speed limit in America. What a snooze between the 70s and the 90s because of the oil crisis.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
So Nixon imposed... I know, it could come again.
Look forward to that.
Yes.
Coming back.
Except all electric car drivers will be allowed to go at 300 miles an hour. But then it was revoked in 1995, and Montana said, okay, we'll just say, we've forgotten how to do speed limits, proper speed limits, so we'll just say, drive however fast you like.
Yeah, that's almost like if it was to do with the gas, it's drive at a patriotic speed, one that will not disrupt the system around you.
Nice.
Very nice.
That's a great
fact. Well done, Cara.
Yeah.
Let's have another.
Yeah, okay. Well, this one is from Mary Campbell, who says, movie actor Robert Redford, who was born in 1936, was a pallbearer for liver-eating Johnson, a man who died in the year 1900. Mm.
Can we guess what he died of?
Give it a go.
I'm going to have a punt at raw liver.
Incorrect.
Oh.
Yeah. You've missed the bigger headline here, which is that was a man born in 1936 burying a man who died in 1900?
Oh, yeah. Completely passed me by. I've got a guess.
Guess it.
Mm-hmm. Long-delayed funeral.
It was a nightmare to organise. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Some guests have to come from a long way away, don't
they? And then before you know it, 45 years have passed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The canapes. Do you have liver? Is that... No, what it was is that this was quite a famous American. This was a guy called John Liver-Eating Johnston, or Johnson, but he was really Garrison. So he was born Garrison. He changed his name to Johnston, but then the newspapers misprinted his name as Johnson. So he's sort of got three names.
I feel like we're focusing on the wrong element of his name to really drill down into.
Well, it's just a very confusing story because this is one of those characters who's sort of stuck in myth, you know. He became famous because his obituary came out and everyone found out about him. But he didn't die for another 20 years after his obituary came out.
What?
Sorry,
can we quickly talk about the liver-eating thing? I know this is elephant in the room.
Okay, Dan, this is the most confusing way we could possibly introduce
it. It's really easy. Okay, a man born in 1936 buried a man who died in 1900, whose name was either Garrison Johnson or Johnston, and he became famous in America 20 years before he died because his obituary was released.
Okay.
What are you not getting?
No, nothing.
Why was he famous?
No, no further questions.
Okay. So his obituary was accidentally released 20 years before he died. And
question.
Yes.
You wouldn't write an obituary for someone unless they were already famous.
That's not true because there are lots of people when you read the Times obituaries who you go, wow, how did I never hear about this person? They may have been famous in their own field.
It's never someone who's just done nothing. You never have the obituary, big full page in the Times, empty space.
Absolutely.
Born, lived, died. So had he done anything?
I think John Liver-Eating Johnston had done something, Anna. Yeah, he ate livers. So this was...
Because James edits this show and he's not on. It's just incredible to see you laying this massive bear trap for him.
So early on as well.
He was an American frontiersman, and he became famous because these myths went around about him that he was killing a lot of Native Americans of one particular tribe. And it was in revenge of the fact that they had murdered his wife. And the idea was that he would kill them and he would remove their liver. And supposedly it was 300 of them that he'd done this with.
Right.
And this became a big myth about him that kind of got spread around America.
Was he liked, or it doesn't sound like a good...
No, but also it's kind of it's a weird myth, because interviewers and biographers have looked into it and they say actually it was all myth, and actually he was friends with that tribe and they shared liver with him from other animals, so he was a good friend of theirs. But he became particularly famous because Robert Redford starred in a movie about his life telling this story. And at the time that was happening, there was a school, a middle school in America, and the teacher was telling the story of this guy who had died penniless, and he died in an area of San Diego where he was basically buried under a freeway. But he'd said he'd love to be buried in the Rockies. So there was a big push to have him reburied. And as a result, Robert Redford was a pallbearer.
Because he'd played him in the film.
Yeah, exactly.
And he had to carry the coffin from his original burial place to the Rockies.
It was a long distance, yeah.
So what I said at the start, like long delayed funeral, we could have just said yes to that. And
no, you can't just leave it at that, can you? I mean, it was general enough that...
No, fair enough. Stunning.
Yeah.
I still don't feel like we got to the bottom of it.
Really? Interesting.
No, I do.
Okay.
Here's one from John Lurish. And John writes, I was talking with a friend who works in the pool and technology industry. She sells pool-related technology, okay? Like swimming pool or water pools. Mm-hmm. She says one of their biggest clients is Kyrburg Nuclear Power Station here in the Western Cape of South Africa. My fact is that Kyrburg Nuclear Power Station uses kamikaze scuba Roombas to help clean the water that's been used in the reactor. So these are vacuum cleaners.
Yeah.
Water vacuum cleaners, wet vacuum cleaners, because you get wet or dry ones, don't you?
Yeah.
And the filter units they have are unable to filter out really small radioactive particles. So these scuba diving underwater vacuum cleaners, robots, are sent in to just filter the water, and they're doomed because obviously it's radioactive, they will break. And apparently this is a really common solution for nuclear reactor maintenance.
Hang on, so they just clean as much as they possibly can before they eventually expire.
I know. Wow. And then they're radioactive, and then they have to be buried with the radioactive waste.
Okay. And Robert Redford always is the pool bearer.
Always, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Sellafield has a load of... They found an old radioactive vacuum cleaner that was buried at Sellafield after an accident there. Yeah, it's just a common thing. It's like kitchen roll, isn't it?
Yeah.
Once you use the kitchen roll, you have to throw away the kitchen roll.
No, I put it back onto the perforation.
So horrible.
You sellotape it back up, don't
you?
Yeah,
hang it out to dry.
Oh, good to see that there's an underwater vacuum cleaner now.
You going to invest?
Well, I should be dead for what I did about 2 years ago.
Oh, what did
you do? I had a broken washing machine and I managed to get the door open, but there was a pool of water underneath. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I thought I'll vacuum it out. And Fenella saw me and quickly explained that.
Your wife shouting, "You suck," from the doorway. You can get wet / dry vacuum cleaners.
As in they can do both. They're amphibious.
Yes.
Nice. Mm.
That was the big revelation for me researching this fact.
Yeah.
Why? I can't work out what I'd use that for. If the bath is dirty, but there's someone in it at the time, so I can't empty it.
I mean, maybe that, yeah.
That's,
maybe.
That's really passive aggressive cleaning, isn't it? No, we love having you over. No, please. Feel at home.
But I just invited you for lunch, and now you're in my bath, Dan. So. Okay, do you want another fact? Yeah. A fact for you from Paul Bernard. A fact for you, he says, related to an older segment you did about haiku poetry. So old that I remember that. The Northern California town of Ukiah hosts an annual haiku festival. Can you guys guess why?
Big Japanese population.
No.
Okay.
Ukiah.
Is it an anagram?
Well, it's an anagram.
It's an anagram. Yeah, of festival.
Of haiku. Of haiku.
Of haiku.
Nice.
Yes, but no, that's not why it's called that. It's named after a village, Native American village, of the Pomo people called Ukiah. But I guess they thought, you know what? We're almost an anagram of haiku.
Mm.
So let's do it. They have a haiku festival.
Is it a palindrome?
It's a palindrome, yeah.
Nice.
Hold on. No, it's not a palindrome. No. What do you mean? It's haiku backwards.
But it's, I don't even know if there's a word for what this is. A reverse.
It's
wrong way round.
Wrong way round word.
Because anagram word is just you scramble the words. That's big deal.
Isn't that butchers speak in Australia when they speak a word the wrong way round?
Yes.
We did this on Fish a long time ago and we had Susie Dent on talking about it, where they speak.
They speak backwards. The word. That's difficult.
To confuse customers.
Okay.
To lure them into buying low quality meat.
That wouldn't tempt me at all. I think you'd gone mad.
This meat is wriggling with tomags.
Should we have another letter? This is from Alex from Manchester, who says, on top of Kok Tobe, which is one of the highest points of the city centre of Almaty in Kazakhstan, stands a monument to the Beatles. Mm-hmm. That's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
did they play Kazakhstan?
They never played Kazakhstan. And this is an interesting point, I guess, that Alex is trying to make, that QI, or No Such Thing as a Fish, once covered that the furthest point on Earth from the ocean is in Urumqi, on the Kazakhstan-Chinese border,
Okay.
otherwise known as the Eurasian Pole of Inaccessibility. And this is a mere few hundred kilometers from Kok Tobe in Almaty. I'm going to claim that Kok Tobe is the Beatles' pole of inaccessibility, being the furthest point that a Beatles monument exists from a performance by any Beatle.
Lovely.
Yeah, and they've said I'm open to being corrected. And I had a quick look. Paul McCartney did play the Red Square. He did play Russia. Hmm. So
okay,
it's still a great distance,
yeah.
But I don't know whether or not there's anywhere closer.
Did they go down under, the Beatles? Just as really obvious.
Absolutely, they did.
They did. Okay, yeah. Okay.
But without Ringo, so if you're missing a Beatle, does that count?
Did he not go?
What the hell? Yeah,
the other three of them went.
Yeah, and they had another drummer come in who was not Pete Best. It was a different one. Yeah.
Did anyone notice?
Yeah. They were pretty famous at the time.
That was just a slam on Ringo's time.
Yeah. But this was, do you know what this was? This was largely Kazakhstan trying to say that the Beatles have had an extraordinary influence on Kazakhstan generally. People would have started learning English because they were listening to Beatles records. And so this was done, I think, in about 2007 that this monument was put up. And it was also put up because they were trying to fix the reputation of Kazakhstan from the damage that Borat had done and the perception.
I got to say, a Beatles monument thousands of miles from anywhere they ever played does sound like the sort of thing you would set up, Dan, in much the same way that you're... Where was it? Your Laurel and Hardy themed ice cream parlor
in Kosovo.
In Kosovo.
Yeah.
You missed this, Anna.
What?
We'll do it. Okay. We'll tell you later.
There's no time. Yeah.
You don't need to.
Here's a great one from Cash Howard. The fact is, the Toko toucan's beak can comprise up to half the total surface area of its body. Imagine the surface area of a toucan.
Yeah.
A Toko toucan.
You've got me on the subspecies there. I'm not.
It's the one with the really, really big beak.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It could be just
50%.
Like a really... 50%. But it could be that it's this toucan has a really spiky beak.
It's not that it's wrinkled.
Oh, okay.
Birds' beaks tend not to be wrinkled.
It's hard. It's going to be hard, the beak.
Yeah, yeah,
isn't it?
Please write in if you know a bird with an amazingly wrinkled beak. But basically, what they use it for, it's so cool. It's partly for heat transfer. So it gets obviously very hot in the tropical environments where they live, and it uses it to pump heat out into the surrounding area. So it's got this network of blood vessels under the surface, and it just radiates heat out away from it. Kind of like elephants do with their ears or that kind of thing. It's basically a massive radiator. They can pump out 400% of the heat that they are generating if they're overheating.
Wow. So if you touch their beak, it would be noticeably hot if it was a very... hot day.
I guess it would, yeah. Yeah.
You could use them as radiators, couldn't you?
You could hang your socks on the beak of a toucan.
You could.
Like that, though. It's very disrespectful.
It is.
Points available for whoever can guess the newspaper headline that I read when this scientific study was done and discovered.
Toucan play.
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
That's not bad.
It's not good, though.
A bird with a big air conditioning bill.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have got there ever.
Well, it's your first show back.
Yeah, I'm rusty. I'll give you guys a fact. This is from Chris Locke, and it's a baseball fact. He says it's another baseball fact. I don't know if you've had one from him before, but his fact this time is that the first recorded mention of the game baseball was actually in Guildford, not in America. And it's in the diary of a guy called William Bray, of Shear.
Wow.
And yeah, it's very cool. And he sent a link. So I read it, went to the trouble of reading it. And he did say, I'm biased towards this fact because I help run Guildford Baseball Club. Oh, and nice. It's nice to think we're the home of baseball globally. But
and still, I'd say the mecca for baseball fans. I mean, I've been to Guildford and I know that's why
yeah,
I went.
It's, in the UK, it's worth saying. For a lot of overseas people, if we're saying it's not in America, it's not far. We've played Guildford.
Have we?
We sure have. Years ago. It's lovely, Guildford, actually. It's nice. Well, nice bookshop.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I do remember Guildford now.
And home of baseball, of course, which is why we played there. Yeah. And it's in a diary entry from the 31st of March, 1755. It's on Easter Monday. And Mr. Bray says, played baseball, with a space between base and ball, with a group of people having visited Stoke Church in the morning, drank tea, stayed till 8, weather cloudy. So life has sort of not changed in England. Cloudy weather.
Guildford, anyway, yeah.
Yes. I will say, actually, it's not the first instance of baseball in this country because another one was found in 2019 in Walton-on-Thames in Surrey, again in the UK, and that was from 1749.
Wow.
And but instead of a bat at the time, you use the palm of your hand to bat the ball.
Ooh, those are hard balls to hit a...
Yeah, I think the balls were a bit softer then, but still, I don't think it's going as far, is it?
And largely the same rules? A diamond...
I don't think they specified. They were mostly commenting on the tea and the cake and stuff.
Should we have one more?
Yeah, sure. I got one here from Melissa Whitcomb, who says, I've got a fact about sniffing feet. According to the Guinness World Records, Madeleine Albrecht from the USA has sniffed around 5,600 feet and plenty of armpits in her career of 15 years working at a foot care and footwear firm in Cincinnati, USA. And I went into it, and it's true. This is a Guinness World Record. It's a very loosey-goosey Guinness World Record.
Yeah, they kind of observed that happening.
They kind of. And also it says she sniffed approximately 5,600 feet and an indeterminate number of armpits, which doesn't feel like something...
it's not scientific.
No, but what it does sound like to me is something beatable. And Anna, you and I are former Guinness World Record holders.
I'm okay.
You sure?
I think there must be something else out there. Sniffing flowers?
Maybe sniffing we'll still do glue. It as a team, but you can just be the witness to me doing the sniffs.
I'd absolutely love to do that. Who's going to provide the armpits? Well, have you got a ready supply?
Your patient zero.
I guess swimming pools and saunas and gyms, there'll be a few bare feet around.
Yeah.
You go sniffing around there.
Yeah.
With your clicker.
I live by the beach. I just need to go for walks.
Yeah.
Or crawls.
Yeah, you've got to get up close. Oh, well, that's lovely.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa.
Yeah, it's an appetizing one to end on.
Okay, that is all of your facts. And now it's time for our facts to be issued to you if you have joined Club Fish, our exclusive members club, at the Friend of the Podcast tier. Then you get one of our headline facts allocated to you in perpetuity. And so we're going to dish out a few of those now. Let's kick off with one going out to Grammarian. And the fact is, before trains had corridors, guards had to climb along the outside of the carriage to check your ticket.
Yes.
This is one of mine, I think.
Very memorable fact.
This was from a book, I think it was called The Railways by Simon Bradley, and it's an absolute stunner of a book. It's so good. And it's about the insane history of early... it's about railways. But these early trains, the guard would just have to clamber the outside of the train.
I wonder what
and you
speeds.
Were locked. You were locked in your carriage sometimes as well. They were low speeds, I guess. It wasn't like being on a bullet train, like crawling past Tom Cruise who's having a fight on the roof. It wasn't like that, I think. But yeah, it was pretty scary, I reckon.
It would be. Any speed is scary if you're grabbing the outside of a train.
Yeah.
This one's for Hannah Marie Christensen, and this is that in the 1990s, Tonga's official finance minister was also its official court jester. Oh, I remember this. This was so long ago. Yes. This is vintage.
All of these are going to be vintage. Just heads up.
Well, it'll be interesting to see when I stop saying that was so long ago, won't it? Wasn't he quite a questionable character, it turned out?
He committed some fraud.
Yes.
Or he certainly did a lot of dubious investing and then fled the country.
But we make it sound in our headline fact like it's just a really fun light thing and not a big criminal, which is what we do.
That's what we do.
We trivialise crime.
Yeah. That's how I see myself.
Should we have another?
Yeah.
Archie Craig, this one goes out to you. And the fact is that Kaiser Wilhelm once lost a valuable arms contract for Germany because he slapped the King of Bulgaria on the bottom.
Yes.
This is yours, Anna.
This is one of mine. Yeah. Yeah, he was just a bit of a lad, a bit of a Jack the Lad.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were having an argument, were they? I think it was just inappropriate.
Exactly. I think he was just incredibly inappropriate with everyone around him and he didn't know how to behave.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've all met people like that.
Yeah.
No names being mentioned.
Obviously, okay. But she was looking at Andy.
Yeah, I know. we did a whole thing about Kaiser Wilhelm, who was eccentric.
Yes, he was amazing, wasn't he?
Yeah. Also, Commander-in-Chief of the Royal Dragoons at the start of the First World War.
Was he?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And was quickly demoted from that job. There's a conflict of interest there, obviously, in that he would have been fighting on our side if he'd turned up.
Oh, yes.
Why was he Commander-in-Chief of the Royal Dragoons?
Oh, because they were cousins, weren't they? They were all cousins.
Oh, you give your cousin something. You don't expect to go to war with him a year later kind of thing.
Because the king, the kaiser, and the tsar, I think, might have all been cousins.
Yeah, okay.
It was incredibly awkward anyway.
Yes.
Here's another one. This one goes out to Tom. Your fact is signs saying beware of pickpockets attract pickpockets. I love this one. And it's because people see the sign, they pat their pockets, they go, ah, there's my Fabergé egg.
Yes.
And then the pickpocket sees that and could just have it.
Did you mention Fabergé because of that story recently?
No.
But did you not see that woman who, for her job, for some reason, she had to be custodian of a Fabergé egg for 24 hours or something,
yes.
Took it home in her handbag, left her handbag on the floor in a pub or something, and then a pickpocket just wanged it away.
Yes.
But must have got home, opened the handbag and thought, what's this piece of tat?
Oh no, thought I've overshot here.
Yeah.
I'm now going to be the subject of an international manhunt. I just wanted someone's bag.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, that was an incredible story.
Extraordinary. I want to hear the conversation with her boss the following day.
I thought someone had swallowed one.
What?
No, I haven't seen that story.
Have you seen Fabergé eggs?
No, because they're big, aren't they? In my head, the police were waiting for him to lay it. You know, there was a...
Dan, I think you've seen this in a cartoon.
Did I dream this?
No, you're thinking of... But someone was fed bananas in India so that they would shit out a bunch of something that they'd eat drugs.
Emeralds or rubies or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but that was many years ago. I think Dan is saying, like, valiant effort to try and get Dan off the hook. Doesn't work. Weirdly, I saw a separate Fabergé egg story recently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which was, I read the book about Prince Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
And
big fan.
I just love the guy and I just want to get some life tips. No, he was touring Russia. And I think accounts of the visit were just that he was shown around, you know, this is when relations were better and there wasn't a war on and all of this. And he was just, not that that would stop him. Anyway, he was just visiting and he was being shown around somewhere like the Hermitage or one of the, you know, the royal palaces with the collection of stuff. And apparently he was just heavily, heavily hinting that he'd love to be given a Fabergé egg. He'd love to own a Fabergé egg one day. And was just trying to get a free Fabergé egg off the host. Outrageous.
Try your luck.
The more I hear about this guy. Yeah. Right, let's have another one.
This one goes out to Ryan Jackson. Ryan Jackson, your fact is now that no one is quite sure how to say Louis Armstrong or Louis Armstrong.
Are we not?
No, this, we did it on the show. So basically, this was one of my facts, and I was reading the fact that no one, including his wife, was quite sure which version it was. It changed all the time. If he was announced on a show, it was one version. There's multiple versions, I believe, of him saying it in different ways. So there just wasn't one agreed version.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Yeah.
Here's another one. This one goes out to Grumbert. The man with the Guinness World Record for the lowest voice can hit notes so low only elephants can hear him.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go sniff those feet over there. You create a distraction.
Who's got the lowest voice out of the four of us?
I think you or me.
Yeah,
but the question is who can go low? Give
me a lowest.
Lowest.
That's pretty low.
Yeah.
You can't just put a silly accent on and make it lower.
Weirdly, you're acting like the silly accent is going to help you get those depths.
Well, it does, because it helps bend your mouth into places.
Ooh.
Oh, there we go. It's Anna.
Knew it. It's... This is a fact for Steph Delory. The first thing was a parliament, and it was the Althing in Iceland. It's been going since the 10th century. This is one of James's, wasn't it?
It was James's.
The word thing, that's where we get the word thing, right? It's from that parliament. And... it's become meaningless enough to just mean thing now. Is that one of the many claims to have been the first parliamentary democracy?
I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think it must have been. And we did a load of stuff about Icelandic horses. Do you remember this?
Yeah, because are they the ones that have the special trots as well? Icelandic horses, I think, have a special way of trotting where they trot with their feet the other way round to normal horses. Something like that.
That sounds plausible, yes.
I think they do. And it's got a special name, like trotting or something like that.
What we find, and you'll find as we do more Little Fishes, Anna, is that it's amazing what you do and don't remember.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Like Dan's story of the guy who swallowed a Fabergé egg and the police were waiting for him to lay it. You'll find that your mind is foggier than you thought. When we're dealing with something we researched for like one day 10 years ago, it
funnily
turns
enough
out it can go anywhere.
Yeah, but the difference is that I immediately got picked up on it until you told that story about how we've got missed memories. You basically accepted Anna's premise that their horses have backward legs.
I'm sure they do. Like they trot on one side of their body, then the other. And they're always falling over.
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, have that fact.
Lovely. Let's have one more.
Yeah, here's the final fact. This goes to Bronwyn. One of the largest majorities in a Brazilian election was won in 1958 by a rhino called Cacareco.
Cacareco. I remember Cacareco.
Do you?
Yeah.
Still serving? It's been a while since we did this fact.
Yeah, you'd think it was just a protest vote, but no, he just had a very strong campaign. Workers' rights, sorting out immigration. Yeah, it was everyone hated the current leaders, didn't they? Why don't we do more of that here, putting animals up for election? That would be fun, wouldn't it? I think that would have made the latest council elections in Britain more entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you have voted for a rhino if there'd been one on your ballot paper, regardless of party?
I don't think I would.
Okay, killjoy.
But I'm just trying to remember the details of this fact. I think cacareco means rubbish.
Yeah, it does.
But I don't think that was a part of the electoral pitch. I don't think the pitch was, I'm a rubbish candidate.
Okay.
I think it was, I'm a rhino and you hate all the humans.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right, actually, Anna. I mean, given the choice, I probably would vote for a rhino.
There you go.
Yeah. What's the headline? We did the beak air conditioner.
He'll give you the horn.
And that's what you want, is it, from your elected politicians?
Slightly too sexy. I regret saying that as a slogan. I've got it. To be a politician, you need thick skin.
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
That is it.
And I'll give you the horn.
That's the scandal that makes you leave office. That's when we take the rubbish out.
Yeah. Okay, that is it. That is all of your facts. If you would like to have a fish headline fact dedicated to you from now and forevermore, all you need to do is go to patreon.com/clubfish. Even if you don't want to sign up to be a friend of the podcast, there is so much fun stuff on there. There's a free tier where you get little extra videos and goodies and all sorts of bonus material. And there's all sorts of other stuff on there. patreon.com/clubfish. And if you would like to submit a fact to be on Little Fish in future, just email podcast@qi.com. We read absolutely every single one and we love receiving them. So podcast@qi.com is the email to send it to. That's it from us. And we'll see you in a few days for another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish. Bye for now.